shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And on this show, where truth is our bitch, we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. And if you don't believe us, just ask them. And, of course, on online at philhendryshow.com. This is our news and information hour. Welcome to this news and information hour. And the reason why we say that is because we basically just read the news and kick it around here between myself, Robert Leonard, and Bud Dickman. Although I'd like you guys to stay on point a little bit here tonight, you know.
Well, most of the time.
Yeah, but a lot of the times you guys are off in left field, man. And last night, I don't know what it was you were talking, one of those stories that we really got off into a tangent that I'd rather not get off into. And again, our website is philhendryshow.com. So if you are listening along this evening, you can also watch. We have our Phil TV in HD video cast. We are like a multimedia extravaganza here on this here show. If you want to, and I say this here show, having been to Catholic school.
Yeah, pretty good.
All right. Anyway, if you want to take a look at what our Phil TV looks like, get a free little look at it, go to our homepage and check out Rapture on Phil TV. That's when we had on Steve Bozell, and he was talking with us about the rapture that never happened. And that's just kind of gone by the wayside, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, man, you know, predicting the end of the world. I think this end of the world prediction stuff, we have to not take it so serious.
Well, we'll never learn, you know.
Well, how are you going to not take it serious? The guy said the world's going to end.
Who cares? I mean, who's the guy that's saying the world's going to end? You know?
Well, it could be like a person like Notre Dame, or I forget how you say that. Nostradamus. What is it?
Nostradamus.
Nostradamus. Well, what'd he say?
Who knows what he said? Let me tell you about Nostradamus. I think about 90% of what that guy said, no one understands. No one in their wildest dreams can figure it out. We've imposed a lot of things onto Nostradamus's quatrains, is what they called them, little poems or these little sayings. We've decided that we're just going to overlay things. Oh, that must mean the World Trade Center. Why, Hister? That must mean Hitler. That's the closest that anybody has come to actually saying, well, look at Nostradamus predicted something. He called some guy named Hister some animal that was going to rule the world or something. But I think the Nostradamus predictions is a load of old camel dung.
Well, really, man, I mean, you'd have to believe that.
He came really close.
He ain't come close to nothing. I don't know anybody that's come close to anything. When I was growing up, I'll tell you a story. When I was growing up, there was a woman that was very, very popular, and a lot of the old creeps out there, and I say that with due respect to all of you. I'm one of you. Many of us will remember when we were kids, there was Jean Dixon. Anybody, you guys know the name? Jean Dixon was big in the newspaper. I think she had a couple of books out. Oh, yeah, Jean Dixon. She had all the big predictions, man. She knew what was going to happen, when it was going to happen, how it was going to happen. And she wasn't, I don't think she was right about anything, man. I think the thing that made Jean Dixon famous, and the reason she got into the newspapers and became famous in the 60s, I think she predicted Kennedy having a problem. I think she said, you better not go to Dallas. Something like that, that propelled her to national fame. But she also made a lot of other weird-ass predictions that never happened, you know.
Like what? Name one.
She said that in the early 60s, born in Egypt, would be a young man who would grow to adulthood and change the face of the earth. He would become the biggest thing in the world.
What about Prince? Yeah.
What do you mean, what about Prince?
Oh, Egypt.
Yes, Egypt. Prince. He would be the biggest thing, almost like Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't happen, man. It didn't happen. I mean, there's nobody. Can you think of anybody? I can't even think of anybody famous born in Egypt other than Mubarak and Omar Sharif, if you want my honest opinion.
Who's he?
He was an actor. He was in Lawrence of Arabia, a bunch of junk. Anyway. So, Gene, I'll tell you who was the closest to anything. It was that sighting or that vision or whatever the hell it was. You might want to look this one up, bud. There was a vision that three little kids had. They saw the Virgin Mary. They were walking down a road, and
I think I know this one. The little kid seen Mary.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know whether it's Fatima or it was Guadalupe. It was one of these. And these kids stood there. as this Virgin Mary apparition told them what was going to happen in the coming century. And two of these kids eventually became nuns, I think. I don't know what happened to the third, but the predictions that were made by this apparition were taken to the Vatican, and the Vatican stored them and did not reveal them, I think, until recently. I think the Virgin Mary apparition or something. I mean, this is pretty weird stuff.
Man, you're making this up.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
No, yeah, man, I read about this.
I'm not making any of this up. The predictions were taken to the Vatican, and the Pope stored them in, you know, a locker where they store the prediction, you know, at the prediction locker.
What do you mean a prediction locker, man? That's insane.
I don't know where they keep this stuff, but wherever they keep it, okay? So anyway, recently they unveiled it. Now, I know that one of them was revealed early, and this was revealed before the Iron Curtain fell or the wall came down or however you want to call it, but the Virgin Mary apparition predicted that Russia would return to God. And that was the... I believe this happened right after the Bolshevik Revolution, as you know, the communist sort of socio-political beliefs, you know, do not accept a belief in God, that it is, as Karl Marx said, opiate of the masses. And so this was a big deal. And that came true. That came true. I don't know how hard it was to predict something like that, but nonetheless, I'll look it up, man, during the break, but it was either Guadalupe or Fatima or somebody. Somebody by the name of Fatima. It was Fatima? And what did they... here it is, Jace, thanks. On May 13, 1956, the issue of Parade magazine... Oh, this is about Gene Dixon. Okay. 1956? So that's how Gene Dixon got famous. In 1956, in the issue of Parade magazine, Dixon wrote that the 1960 presidential election would be dominated by labor and won by a Democrat who would then go on to be assassinated or die in office, though not necessarily in his first term. She later admitted, during the 1960 election, I saw Richard Nixon as the winner, and at the time made unequivocal predictions that JFK would fail to win the election. In the 1956 pronouncement, she merely stated that a president would be assassinated or die in office, not necessarily that one would be assassinated. So I guess she... went back on what she said. But nonetheless, that made her very, very famous.
What about the kid at the Fatima?
We'll find out about that. All right, anyway, it's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're going to be coming back here in a few minutes with a few stories. I guess we got time to get into one of them. Oh, an Oklahoma jury has convicted a pharmacist who was once hailed as a hero. What happened? A jury on Thursday convicted an Oklahoma City pharmacist of first-degree murder, saying he went too far when he pumped six bullets into a teenager who tried to rob the drugstore where he worked and suggested that he spend the rest of his life in prison. Jerome Ursland, 59, had been hailed as a hero for protecting two co-workers during the May 19, 2009 robbery attempt at the Reliable Discount Pharmacy in a crime-ridden neighborhood in South Oklahoma City. A prosecutor, however, said that after Ursland shot Antoine Parker in the head, knocking the six-year-old to the ground, Ursland himself made himself judge, jury, and executioner by getting a second handgun and shooting the boy five times in the abdomen. A coroner's report said the latter shots killed Parker. This defendant was absolutely not defending himself or anyone else, Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Chance told jurors. Defense attorney Irvin Box asked jurors to close their eyes and imagine what they would do in the same situation and told them Ursland had to take action to end the threat. He eliminated an armed robber. Police said Parker wasn't armed, and since the shooting have disputed Ursland's claim that he was wounded during the robbery attempt. He did not testify at the trial. Eight women, four men. They recommended a life sentence after deliberating 3.5 hours. How about that, man?
Man, I tell you something. In this country, you can't even shoot nobody. It's robbing you, man. You're going to go to jail.
Well, think about it, though, man, for just a second, okay?
What to think about?
Well, he shot the guy. The guy's down. Now, according to this, he's out of bullets. He grabs another handgun and fires five times into the kid's gut. Now, it may be argued that police officers, when they're faced with deadly force, will oftentimes respond with a volley of shots, a fusillade of shots that to a lot of lay people seem like overkill, but cops want to make sure a guy is down, especially when he has a gun. This kid didn't have a gun.
What are you supposed to do, man? Think sit there and think about all this stuff? He ain't a cop. He's just a citizen. And a guy's in a store, and a kid come in trying to rob him, and a regular citizen's supposed to think all this?
Look at man, it doesn't take a lot to know that you've got a guy dropped on the ground. The guy is down. He doesn't have a gun in his hand. He's got nothing. He's on the ground. You just shot him in the head. It doesn't take a genius. Even if you've got a gun and you've got bullets in that gun, it doesn't take a genius. You can certainly you draw down on this guy or whatever, and you've got him, and someone's calling the cops, and that's where it should end. Now, to pump five extra shots, I guess, in our society, at least this jury believes, a normal and a reasonable human being is going to stop and not continue firing unless he really has to. They didn't have a gun on this guy. He was already on the ground.
All you're doing is defending a criminal.
You guys aren't even thinking about this, man. That's all you're doing. You're just being pissed off.
Yeah, I'd be pissed off, man. The guy coming in my store.
Well, the kid was shot in the head, went to the ground, no gun, laying there.
Yeah, I'd go get another gun. I'd shoot him, too.
Well, guess what? You'd be sharing a bunk with this guy then for the rest of your life. How's that feel?
I'd get another lawyer.
Well, good for you, man. You know how many guys are in prison with other lawyers? That was the decision that they made. I ain't saying I would have recommended that if I was on that jury, but I can understand. I can. I mean, I'm trying to see this from... I always like to put myself in the other guy's shoes, you know? I'm just trying to see, I don't know.
I'll bet you anything, if you was a guy that happened to, you'd shoot a guy five times in the stomach, too, and reload and everything.
Is that what you think about me, bud?
No, I don't think you're bad. I think you would, though.
That's what you think about Phil Hendry, huh? If I saw a guy laying there with no gun, I'd go and get another gun with five bullets, and I'd go ahead and pump it right into him.
Yeah, I think you would, too.
Thanks a lot, guys.
That's not being a... I'm not trying to say you're bad.
You just did. You basically said that I'm some kind of an idiot. That's what you said.
Well, you are.
Shut up. All right, we're going to be back on the Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and we'll have all this Three Secrets of Fatima stuff. We got the lowdown on that. And coming up, after a growing outcry, the Canadian mother of the genderless baby is now defending herself. Oh, boy, wait till we hear. We were really on it last night, man, talking about this Canadian couple that they don't want to have a kid with a gender yet. And people have been ripping into these silly people. So let's find out what's coming up next from them. The Whitaker, her name is Whitaker, and his name is something like Doofus. I forget. Anyway, check us out on the web, too, at philhenryshow.com, the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman, News and Information Hour. So it was the Three Secrets of Fatima that I was referring to, and I can't read them all because it's a very lengthy, and we're looking at Wikipedia, which I don't trust anyway. However, in this case...
Yeah, but the Wikipedia is the most complete.
Well, we don't know what's complete, but there were three secrets that were spoken of and to these children. Now, it was in July of 1917, around noon, this apparition, now popularly known as the Lady, Our Lady of Fatima, gave them three secrets. And these three predictions or secrets were involved hell, World War I, World War II, and the shooting of John Paul II. That's according to the official and orthodox interpretation. And the two of the secrets were revealed in 1941 in a document written by one of the children, a Portuguese shepherd. I shouldn't say it was a child. It was a Portuguese shepherd by the name of Lucia Santos and her cousins Jacinto and Francisco Marto. Lucia, I think, went on to be a nun, and she revealed one of the secrets in a document in 1941 at the request of Jose da Silva, who was the bishop of Laria. And then there was another secret, the second secret, which was the second secret was a statement that World War One would end and goes on to predict another war, World War Two, during the reign of Pope Pius the 11th. Should men continue offending God and should Russia not convert? The second half requests that Russia be consecrated to the Immaculate Heart. So a lot of this had to do with Russia being godless. The third secret, without reading a big-ass thing here, was supposed to have been released in 1960, I think, and was not, if I'm correct, and the papal reasons for not releasing the secret, I don't know what they were, and you guys could look this up, but that had to do with the shooting of Pope John Paul. Now, is all of this accurate? I don't know. Were these the words of this apparition, or were these the things that were concocted by these three shepherds? I don't know. I suspect. One can be in the throes of hallucination that's not drug-induced, that's not induced by anything other than adrenaline and the release of histamines and all kinds of crazy biochemistry in the brain. A person, religious people down to the years have been in the state of hallucination, and that doesn't make what they're seeing or hearing or believing any less valid. But it's, in my opinion, more likely that there was some kind of a hysterical. And I realize this probably pisses people off, you know.
Yeah, man, there's some people out there think the Virgin Mary did appear.
All right, fine, the Virgin Mary appeared. But nonetheless, what I'm more interested in is what was said or what is claimed to have been said or what these shepherds brought back to the official Catholic hierarchy. And it all seems to be very, very interesting. It does seem to prognosticate, and correctly so, and that's why I said what I said at the very beginning. We were talking about Gene Dixon and Nostradamus and all these jackasses. There's only one instance in my life that I read of predictions being made that actually came true or were close to coming true, and that was this Fatima thing, see?
So you're saying that Virgin Mary, she was right about stuff, but the Nostradamus wasn't.
I don't even know if No, I'm saying that the Virgin Mary, if she existed, yes, she was right. Nostradamus.
Call Nostradamus. What? Nostradamus. Nostradamus, I mean.
Oh, okay, thank you. Yeah, I didn't know what you meant.
Well,
I knew what you meant. So there you go. That's it in a nutshell. Read up on it, Three Secrets of Fatima, and go somewhere other than Wikipedia. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, you don't like Wikipedia.
Wikipedia has come back to bite me on the ass too many times, man. Too many times with you guys at Wikipedia, I've believed what I've read, and the next thing you know, oh, well, it ain't quite, it's not exactly like that, and a bunch of other crap. So whatever you do, and God knows we have the opportunity now with the World Wide Web, which is basically having the largest library in the world right there in your home. It's one of the greatest things that's ever happened, I think, to the human race. So that if you have a question about something, don't settle for one source. Go and get two or three more. Find out what the truth is, man. We have never, ever been in a better position to know what is happening in this world and what has happened than we are in right now. And one other thing. Wherever you go and whatever you do in your research, try to make those sources as close to official, and what I mean by official, officially academic and scholastic as possible. Don't send me links, as I often get, hey, Phil, did you read this article? Prison Planet, or whatever. Was that Planet Prison, or whatever it's called?
Yeah, it's called Prison Planet.
I gotta believe Prison Planet? Like, there's some real objective journalism there. Any more than I would believe an article somebody sent me from Fox or CNN. If you start out with a news article, say from Associated Press, even Reuters, it doesn't matter, BBC, I mean, there are some areas, New York Times, some publications and news sources that I would trust as objective, and then you move on from there to something else. But don't start out with, wow, did you see this? Yeah, what website? The National Socialist Daily Workers Journal. Oh, yeah. That's great, man. Thanks so much for that. I'm really going to, be informed, man. Right. All right, when we come back, we'll get into this story, which I can't wait to read. The Canadian mother, last night we were talking about this woman, this Kathy Witterick, and the guy she lives with, David Stalker. Well, actually, they are married. And they have a baby that they're expecting, and the baby is without gender, and that's by design. They don't want the kid suffering from head trips. They don't want people putting a lot of head trips on this kid about, oh, wow, you're a girl. That means you're this and that. So they're keeping the kid genderless. And they've also, they've got two other sons. It probably just kills them that the world knows they're boys. Even though they dress them in pink with pink wigs. I mean, there's something really wrong with these people. Nonetheless, the story came out yesterday, and there has been a backlash, a reaction in Canada, and I can't wait to find out what it has been. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show at philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry. The Patriot Hotline dot radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Now then, I got, this is a trip. Why is that sitting out there like that?
What is?
I don't know. Anyway, here's what I want to tell you. We have here the story on the Canadian mother that we talked about last night, but I want to get the I want to get the audio. There's just one audio clip. It's from a gender researcher. He was on the Today Show. I'm not exactly sure whether it's all that important to hear this guy, but what the hell, you know? We thought we'd find the audio and then launch into the story here of this woman Witterick and her husband and the kid with no
penis.
No, get out of here.
Can't say that, man.
Say no penis. The kid with no gender is what the kid is. But I can't find this right now, man. Anyway, Canadian mother defends keeping gender secret amidst growing controversy. A Canadian couple says it's none of the world's business to know their baby's gender, despite a firestorm of criticism over their controversial decision to keep their infant's sex a secret. And that's all well and good, and I'm sure that that's exactly how a great many of us might even imagine it, but there's more to this story than just that. This is a couple that really doesn't want their kids' gender known at all anywhere, to the extent that they masquerade the gender of their kids. Kids got on a pink wig, man, come on.
Is that a boy?
Yeah, it's a boy. That's the other kids. Kathy Witterick said her four-month-old baby Storm should be able to develop its own sexual identity without having to conform to social stereotypes or bow to predetermined expectations associated with gender. Now, that may be well and good. I'm male. What is that to be male? I will decide what it is to be male.
All right.
There's a couple of things you can't do when you're male. What's that? Give birth to a baby. I will decide. Well, now, wait just a minute. You can't decide that. You can't decide that, man. Well, yeah. So don't give me that line of horse hockey. Anyway, Witterick, 38, and her husband, David Stalker, have faced a backlash since the couple's story first appeared in the Toronto Star last weekend. Witterick says her critics are being judgmental. Of course, that's what it's called. We're judging you. Witterick said in an email Friday that the idea that the whole world must know what is between the baby's legs is unhealthy, unsafe, and voyeuristic. We know. Well, why do you know? Are you voyeuristic and unclean and unsafe? And we're keeping it clean, safe, healthy, and private. Clean, safe, healthy, and private. Witterick said Storm has a sex which those closest to him or her acknowledge and said they don't know yet about the baby's color or dress preferences. They don't know yet about the baby's color or dress preferences. We must know. You know, this is kind of like the way they treated the emperors of the old world countries, whether in Asia or Europe. If the new emperor, the newly crowned king, was underage, was a child, in some instances, if the kid farted to the left, that meant invade Bulgaria or something, you know.
You kidding?
I don't know, man. I mean, it's a crazy, weird-ass time in the history of the human race. Well, he's the king, and if he's the king and he's divinely placed on that throne, well, then the kid may burp up some strained peas, and that means you know, we're off the gold standard.
What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about kings and queens, man. That's how they dealt with them when they were 3 years old.
Oh.
Well, that's what the way this family is. You know, Storm must only decide what color of skirt and what kind of bra, you know, whatever. What if it's a boy and wants to wear a brassiere, I guess. So, Witterick sent an email Friday, the idea that the whole world must know what is between the baby's legs is unhealthy, unsafe, and voyeuristic. We know, and we look at it every night. Witterick said Storm has a sex which those closest to her or him, Witterick and her husband have also been criticized for the way they are raising their other two children. This is really gives me the creeps. 5-year-old Jazz and 2-year-old Keo are well aware that they're boys, says who, but have been encouraged to shun gender norms and express themselves in whatever way they wish. For instance, they feel that it's okay to create human beings by procreating with a tree, and they've allowed the boys to have sex with a variety of different trees to see if babies are made that way. When told, of course, they're not, the parents said, "How dare you insult our intelligence? Of course we know they're not, but maybe these kids think something else. Let's just watch and see what develops." Huh?
Jeez. Really?
Not really.
Man, you know when he's kidding?
Witterick said Jazz has the right to choose his clothes and hairstyle and said he chooses... How about if the kid said that he doesn't want you as his mother anymore? Does he have that, Mrs. Witterick? Does he have that right? Because I would endorse that. That one there, I'm backing that one up 100%. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So I think you should, first of all, put the kids in front of you and say, "Do you want them as your mommy and daddy?" "No." "All right, see ya." How do we know that was a free choice? Yeah, well, same question over here. Anyway, Witterick said Jazz has the right to choose his clothes and hairs. Oh, it's a boy, huh? Oh, they already told us.
Yeah, they already told about the other two. It's just a new one.
Witterick, Jazz has the right to choose his clothes and hairstyle and said he chooses freely to wear pink despite criticism. Bull crap. No kid likes to be put down.
I don't know, man. You know, if the parents supported me, the kid likes the pink.
Yeah, but he's getting all kinds of crap from his schoolmates. Don't you think that would have some effect? I mean, kids are, you know, susceptible to that peer pressure. Anyway, Jazz has a strong sense of being a boy, and he understands that his choice is to... What does that mean, he has a strong sense of being a boy? You just said that they should pick their gender identities. In other words, not that they're boy or girl, but they want to... How they express their gender their way. Now you're putting judgments on him because you're saying he has a strong sense of being a boy. Well, what does that mean?
Well, he knows he's got a you-know-what.
Okay, so he knows he's got a you-know-what. The mother just says he has a strong sense of what... So he has a really strong sense that he has a penis. Well, that's great. That's... Yay. We worked 5 years on that one. Great. What else? No, that's... Witterick said the argument that children need a sex taught to them in order to feel safe in the world does not hold up in their experience. What do you mean by a sex taught to you, other than the fact that little boys are given guns and little girls are given dolls? Is that what she's saying? Or that boys wear blue and girls wear pink when they're born? Is that the unholy reinforcement that we are forcing on our children that is warping them and turning them into God knows what, cannibals, cannibal killers? She said an infinite 4 months. And who is this woman, Witterick? What does she know? She's a mother, I understand that, but they're interviewing her like, "Mrs. Witterick, please inform us, won't you? Now, what is your education?" "I took basket weaving." "Uh-huh." She said an infant 4 months is still learning to recognize himself or herself, and it's not appropriate to force a sex on them. Now, at the age of 4 months, mothers and dads that are listening to the Phil Hendry Show tonight, how do you force a sex, not sex, but a sex? How do you force a gender on your 4-month-old? Tell me real fast. Come on.
Well, what's that lady saying? Like, put on blue or something?
No, man, no. 4-month-old kid, how are you forcing a sex on that kid? Are you saying that like a little boy, do they put a little airplane mobile over his crib?
What are you talking about, a mobile?
Like those little things that hang from the ceiling?
Well, like, I don't know.
Well, I don't know anything about 4-month-old kids, so I guess it's kind of goofy, man. I'm trying to think of how do you force a sexual, in other words, how do you force consciousness of a gender on a 4-year-old? Witterick said the couple has been trying to keep their children safe from a media frenzy, but said it's been difficult. The couple's been criticized for imposing their ideological values on it. How did we find out about you in the first place, Mrs. Witterick? That's what I'd like to know. Did you write an email or a letter to the Toronto Jackball Mail? You know, I bet you shoved your kisser out there. That's how we got to know you. And then you're all upset about the media frenzy. She said the couple's been trying to keep their children safe from this media frenzy. The couple's been criticized for imposing their ideological values on a newborn and subjecting their kids to ridicule. Says Witterick, as she wrote in this email, Storm will certainly need to understand his, her own sex and gender to navigate the world. The outcry has confirmed that clearly. Well, you know, you ain't so different from the rest of us, lady. But there has never been any question that within our family, the issue of sex and gender and the decisions relating to it are always open for age-appropriate discussion, Witterick wrote. What do you mean, age-appropriate? What does that mean?
Well, what are you saying, man? I mean,
I'm saying that if this woman wants to lift off of her children the consciousness of gender identity the imposition of gender identity and consciousness, then what do you mean by age appropriate? Because it seems to me that a discussion of that, at least, is appropriate to any age in their house. But she's already laying down the rules. Witterick says it's important to challenge traditional thinking. Why is that? The discussion that emerges not only outs people in their rush to judge they demonstrate the prevailing views, but also has the effect of helping people examine whether they truly do believe the status quo to be the best that we can do. Is this the best that we can do to grow healthy, happy, kind, well-adjusted children? Not what you're doing, lady. No. The thing that we need in our society more than ever before, and maybe not so much in Canada, we need moms and dads. Okay, we need moms and dads. That's what we need. And discussions about whether a kid decides how he wants to be a boy, I mean, that's strictly for you bourgeois jackasses. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that these people are probably upper middle class, bourgeois, up the yin-yang. You know, they think they're revolutionary in their thinking, but in point of fact, they're elite. And they're hermetically sealed from the reality of life. If you want to know how we raise healthy and happy and well-adjusted kids, I got a great idea. Let's have a dad and a mom. Or any two-parent unit. How about that, okay? I don't want to... But let's have parents in the house. Sunday dinner together. Somebody standing over them and making them do homework. Someone there to give them advice. Someone there to hold them when they're hurt. Someone there to tell them when to get up and when to go to bed. To make sure their teeth are brushed. To make sure they're going to the doctor and getting dental care. To make sure that they're protected. To give them a view of the world that's intelligent and that is strong and that is with humor and realistic. To have enough maybe money in the bank to send them to a nice college. And if you can't send them to a nice college, send them to a public college. But, you know... This is what we need. Not you clowns with your puffed up view of life, with your experimental view of things because, you just woke up one day and you took a whiff of lilacs outside and you decided, oh, and not only are you going to make a difference for yourselves, which is fine, but now people like you suddenly are seen as some kind of a genius, man. In the days and the months to come, I'm going to be dry heaving at the number of people that are going to be writing articles. You know, maybe there is something to this, you know.
Well, I'm not going to read them, man. Why would you even put yourself through that?
How am I going to avoid it? Laura Swan, a friend of Witterick's, I bet you she made that last name up.
Yeah, I bet she calls herself Swan on account of she thinks it's bitching.
Laura Swan, a friend of Witterick's, called Witterick a really good mom. Kind of weird, and I think she's a lesbian, but I really like her, said Swan. I'm kidding. She didn't say that. She said she's a really good mom. She said her kids are great, but she didn't want to comment any further because she might say something. In fact, she most likely would say something that would make Witterick hate her. A follow-up article in The Star published earlier this week, that's the Toronto Star, documented furious reader feedback criticizing the parents for turning child-rearing into a social science exercise. Dr. Ken Zucker, the chief psychologist and head of gender identity service for children at Toronto's Center for Addiction and Mental Health, said the story has caused anxiety among people who are now wondering how they became who they are. That's what I call... Now, those are people who've got some problems anyway. The reason this story's gone viral and been so much interest is because it's activated an ongoing discourse of how does a child's gender identity actually get formed, Zucker said. There would be people on one side of the spectrum who would say that gender identity is completely hardwired, and even if you don't have, if you don't sex a child, they're going to develop a gender identity in accordance with their biology. And then there are people on the other side of the spectrum that say that gender identity is completely influenced by socialization. And then there's Phil Hendry, who says it's a little bit
of both.
Of both. Exactly. Thank you, bud. All right, coming up, an amazing story of a dog with two broken legs that crawled back home after a tornado blew him away. The Phil Hendry Show coming up next, and philhendryshow.com. Don't forget, KFI tonight will be our video cast on KFI AM 640 here in Los Angeles, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
All right. Final segment here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget, philhendryshow.com. Tonight, our video cast will be our KFI show here in Los Angeles. This is one of them heartwarming stories, man, you know.
Yeah, man, that dog, I can't believe it, man. I can't believe it.
I read a story once about a dog done this.
Well, you know, there was a story, an amazing story of a family that... This is an amazing story of a family that was out sailing, and their dog fell off the boat. The dog found its way to an island. The dog was spotted months later on this island by some workers for the Australian government. The dog was publicized. The family got it back. It was an amazing story of survival. And the dogs, they say, swam about a mile to get to the shore. Here is a dog with two broken legs, finding its owner after the tornado blew this little guy away in April. And his name is Mason. He's a one-year-old terrier mix. He'd been hiding inside the family's garage when a tornado barreled through North Smithfield, Alabama on April the 27th. His owners ran back into the house to take cover. When they emerged, their home had been destroyed. The garage was intact, but the dog, Mason, was gone. The garage remained intact, but the door came off. The dog was sucked out of the garage, said Dr. Barbara Benhart of Birmingham Jefferson County Animal Control. The owners searched for days, but they'd given up hope. They came back to the site weeks later to sift through the damage, only to find Mason sitting on what was left of the front porch. Is he going to make you cry?
You kidding me? Dog came off the porch?
Yeah. Left homeless and without enough resources to take care of the resilient pup, the family called the county animal control office to see if they could help him recover. The owner, who wanted to remain anonymous, broke down in tears when he realized that they couldn't take care of their beloved pet. His front legs were flopping, completely broken. They almost windmilled, said Dr. Benhart. So I asked her director if I could farm out this dog to one of my vet friends and see if we could get someone to help us. Dr. Bill Lamb of Vulcan Park Animal Control in Birmingham offered to help without hesitation. He took one look at the dog, and he took him in. He was dehydrated. He was malnourished. He was about 50% of his normal body weight. Once he was able to stabilize Mason, he enlisted the help of two orthopedic surgeons to fix the puppy's legs. It took three of us 3.5 hours, two plates, and 17 screws later, he had his legs. Though the doctors offered their services free of charge, many people in the Birmingham area have offered donations to cover Mason's medical bills. We didn't expect anything, said Lamb. The donations will go to cover the hardware, the screws and the plates, and what's left over will go into the general fund for those who still need help. Wow, now Mason's recovering nicely, according to Lamb. The plan is to help keep him at Vulcan Park Animal Care until his owners can take him back. He broke down in tears when he found out they could take him home, said Lamb of the owner. We have it worked out where he is going to be able to go back home and when he's healed. For now, Mason just wants to go back to being a normal puppy. How old is this dog? 1 year old, man. Not old at all, huh? Let's listen to some of this audio. We do have some audio clips here. I don't even know what time it is, but we got a little bit of a minute. Here's some audio clips. This is in an interview with WBRC Television. Dr. Benhart, a Birmingham Jefferson County Animal Control, explains how Mason traveled back home after being the victim of this tornado.
He's got two broken legs, and they're distal radial ulnar fractures. They've not been able to be in alignment, so neither one of them have healed. So he had to crawl on two broken legs to get home.
I wonder how far he had to go.
Well, man, a tornado probably blew him halfway across the country.
Well, I don't think he blew him that far.
Yeah, how far away do you think he went?
How far do you think a tornado going to blow you?
Well, there's a lot of tornadoes that blow people away, not halfway across the country. Here is Mason's vet, Dr. Bill Lamb, speaking to the same television station about the dog's treatment.
The left leg, which is actually was the challenging leg because it was broken so very, very close to the wrist, we finally wound up, after trying to pin it several different times, putting a very specialized facial maxillary plate with 10 screws in it, or 9 screws in it. So now Mason is 2 plates, 17 screws down the road, and so far, so good. Everything lined up well, stable. So far, we're 5 days out of post-op.
Oh, man, do we have time for this last piece of audio? This is the animal control shelter
employee.
This is
probably the most dramatic that we've seen as far as an injury in an animal that survived this long. It's kind of started tapering off the amount of animals we're seeing come in as a result of the storm. For an animal just to show up on someone's porch after all this time is pretty remarkable.
All right, our show is produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is John Elkin, our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. The Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. See you tonight.
Phil Henry.